everyone. Welcome to Story Nerds. I'm Hannah Davis, one of your hosts. Today, unfortunately, Jess could not make it, but we have somebody who's going to be co-hosting with me today, and her name is Wanda Erickson, and she is a librarian at the Great River Regional Library at in Upsala, Minnesota. And let me tell you that this lady is practically legendary. So welcome, Wanda.
Oh, my word. That is hard to follow. I have never been, well, I think I might have been called legendary once, but it was in a BC world, so we won't go there. Yes, I am a librarian, have been for many years, since 1977. Well, I taught first.
Okay.
And then I was a librarian.
So, for those of you who aren't aware, which probably is basically most of you, Wanda runs what I like to call the little library that could. Upsala is a small town in Minnesota, and we're going to get to this a little bit later in the show, but she has had some of the most incredible writers come and visit her small town library, and she runs an incredible library program. So we're also going to talk about some, she has lots of tips for us readers as a librarian. We'd love to hear what she has to say. But first, before we get into any of that, we are going to talk about some of our favorite books from our different stages of life.
Nerd time!
I know! So time to nerd out over, let's talk first really quick about name a childhood book or book series that you just loved during your childhood.
Well, I distinctly remember the very morning that I learned what letters were on a page. Dick and Jane, you know that reading series, and the teacher called me to the front. So just like Betsy in B is for Betsy, Carolyn Haywood's book, I went past those big windows up to the front, and she gave me the pointer, and I said, look. And she said, yes, that's the right word. Look, look, look. And I was hooked. Dick and Jane, I just distinctly remember that morning when she
So were those the books that you
learned to read on? Yes.
Oh, I'm wow. That is incredible.
Yes, thank you.
I don't remember what books I learned to read on. That's really quite interesting. Yeah. I do remember some of my favorites over the years. But tell us about Dick and Jane, because that is kind of an old school, should I say old school? I feel like
sure,
I'm such a young person.
It was the reader that we used to learn to read, those of us who went to school. I was born in 55, so I was entering first grade around 61, 62. And that was the reader that we used. And there were a series of books. Dick and Jane was the first one, I believe. Those of you who are more familiar with this series certainly can correct me. But they had Spot the dog and Fluff the cat. And there was Dick and Jane. And I think there was a little brother or sister, too. But I, you know, that seared memory of look just has me by the memories.
Has it in the, it's just seared
all
in your
memory.
All the feels
are there.
What, is that the one by Zerna Sharp? Is that the author?
You know,
or written
I don't
by
know
William
that.
Gray?
I don't know the author. I just remember the big blue book. And of course, the teacher had this huge, like 4 foot big book on an easel that was in the front of the room. And the pointer, the wooden pointer with the little rubber end on it. And
oh, man.
Yeah. And we were all there in our frilly little dresses. And yeah.
I grew up reading the Boxcar Children series and Nancy Drew, which that was a little later. And we can talk a little bit more about Nancy Drew later. But the Boxcar Children series, I remember my dad, that was one of the really incredible blessings of my parents. They read to me as a kid all the time, every night. And it was the only part about bedtime that I liked.
I have the added blessing. I, for all these years, have been a K-12 media specialist. So not only am I a public librarian, but I'm a school librarian too. So I have the best of both worlds there. And I can relate to some of these books that you're going to talk about from your childhood too.
Well, and the funny thing is I don't necessarily remember the specifics of the Boxcar Children, but I remember there's just these like little mysteries and the family is a set of siblings that essentially they live in a boxcar and they were found by an old man, if you will, an older man.
Actually, he was their grandfather.
And grandfather,
he knew,
that's
he knew
right.
where they were the whole
oh,
time.
Man. See, I really should have gone back and reread some of these before I did, but I know they're currently packed away in a box somewhere in my parents' house. So
at least you still have them.
We do. I was told in college that I had to pare down my boxes of stuff in my parents' attic.
Well,
and I spent a week in a very non air conditioned, in the middle of summer heat, attic, going through my boxes. And sure enough, a handful of boxes were the books that I had as a kid.
Yeah.
And I had to decide what ones I'm keeping and what ones I'm letting go of. And
how cruel.
I mean, you can imagine how many I ended up keeping anyway. But the Boxcar Children, those are books that I think those are going to be generational books that hopefully when I have kids, I can
teach
them to read on them and eventually get them into them too. Oh, those were so great.
Yeah. Did you also read Lois Lenski?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Strawberry Girl was probably my favorite. That won a Caldecott Award, I'm pretty sure. No, a Newbery Award. A Newbery Award. And she went out of favor for a while, but I think there's a resurgence coming back. She had a way of writing. The setting came alive for you. You lived with the character in that place. And I loved her books too.
Oh man. So Boxcar Children, that was a fave. I want to get now into the young adult category here. Somewhere like,
I got a whole bunch more. No.
We were joking before. This is constantly a problem with us. We have far too many books that are like parts of our lives. Isn't that incredible?
Yes.
It's like the part in You've Got Mail where she said the books you read as a child become a part of your identity that nothing else can. I think I'm almost directly quoting that. And that was simply from memory. I'm quite impressed by that by myself. But it's so true because these books are like your avenue into a whole new world when you first start to read. It opens up the world to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay, but we do need to move on to some older grades here. Yeah. Let's still say within junior high to high school.
Okay.
Which, Wanda, that's going to be very different for you than for me.
Yes, it is. Because these are still my BC years here, so.
what were some of yours? I want to hear what was in your era. Were you a reader of kind of the classics, or did you go for more of the moderns that have turned into classics, or maybe have just stayed in that era?
My teen years were dominated by science fiction and fantasy. I read Asimov, the Foundation series, amazing writer. Frank Herbert, the Dune series, which has overtones of Messiah. I can see, looking back now, I can see how God planted seeds into my heart, into my life, through all of these things. And Anne McCaffrey and the Pern Dragons. I can still feel how I felt when I was reading them. The most important book from that era, though, was Fahrenheit 451, and I have a really cool story about that because I read it in high school, and it stayed with me kind of subconsciously, I think, until our book club here at the public library about 5 years ago reread it. And as I was reading it, I went, this is the book. And I just started almost weeping because the scenes that I came across again, they changed my life in high school. They made me realize how important books were and how important words were, and especially the theme, if anyone's read Fahrenheit 451, that scene on the riverbank where he comes into the other encampment and meets the other people who also had books in them. And he is able to recite those words. It was so powerful. And that's the scene I remembered all through those years, although I couldn't remember the book until about 5 years ago. And there it all came flooding back, and I went, oh, this is the book.
And isn't it incredible how you have those very emotional, visceral, those reactions, because what you read in those years, in those very formative years, just become, again, they become such a part of you that when something triggers in your mind that remembers and you recall about those years reading those books, it gives you such a different feeling than anything else.
Yeah. I loved everything he wrote. He was a phenomenal writer. I just recommend him highly. He causes you to think. And I think that's one of the strengths of science fiction, is it causes you to think.
Yeah. And that, I think there's a great truth to that. I have to admit that I don't typically read a ton of science fiction, but the stuff that I have, it's, there's a lot of depth to it that I think people don't assume right away.
Especially the masters, you know, the great writers of science fiction.
I mean, J.R.R. Tolkien. I mean,
that was my entire, my latter teen years and my adulthood, my young adulthood. I have read
all of his works, or what did you start with?
The Hobbit.
You did start with The Hobbit.
Yeah,
okay.
And then Lord of the Rings. That was the book. Those were the books I was reading. This is hard. Those were the books that I was reading as my mom was laying dying, and I was with her at her bedside. And so for a long time, I couldn't read them again. But when the movies came out, I did. So they're important to me.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
Yes.
Very cool.
My teen years, I remember being obsessed in junior high. From late elementary school into junior high, I still am super into suspense and mystery. And so Encyclopedia Browns turned into Nancy Drews.
Yes.
It was like just kind of a very good phase into that. Encyclopedia Browns I loved because you could pick your own adventure. That just seemed so fun to me. I could choose the ending I wanted based on this path that you found. I still want to go back and reread those now adult. Well, I... after I read the whole stack of books that still sit on my to-be-read pile, I'll get back to
those. We'll get to that later because I got a whole list of those.
But the Nancy Drews, I remember... just absolutely loving because she was, you know, she was that detective that was like kind of fun and cool. And she was a teen girl. Like who else was like that? You know, nobody
in that era. I mean, she was one of the quintessential female characters in young adult literature.
She still is.
Yes,
I find that so fascinating that still kids now read Nancy Drew.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
My mom was so into Nancy Drew as a kid too. So she passed on her books to me when I started reading Nancy Drew. And it was such a fun thing. I think that was one of the very first instances I remember feeling connected to a story that knowing it's just more than mine. Like other people have read this and it's not just my friends, it's my mom. You know, like there's a connection point there where it's like when your parents are reading books to you as a kid, it's a little bit different because it's like the Boxcar Children were not their stories when they were around. You know, that wasn't what they read, but it was what they read to me. So that kind of has a special meaning. But it was much different to hear my mom say, "I read these as a kid, and now it's your turn." Yeah. And it's kind of just this like, and I'd say that probably was most meaningful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nancy Drew stories, I don't even remember specifics again, but I just remember being so in love with trying to figure it out. And I still do. I still, Nancy Drews are still so fun for me. I haven't reread any of those in probably three, well, maybe it's only been a couple years. I think sure. I reread one a couple years ago.
That's so interesting. I'm glad to hear you say that you are willing and able and do reread those young adult novels, because some people, they just won't look at picture books or young adult novels because they feel they're for the kids.
You're too old.
Know. Yeah. That's not
no, but
true.
Nancy Drew is so, oh man.
And now it's time for a quick break for our advertiser for this episode.
Carla Laurie Arno's Under Scottish Stars, which is the highly anticipated conclusion to the McDonald family trilogy, is now available. Recently widowed Serena McDonald Stewart focuses on her children to the exclusion of her career, her art, and her sanity. When her brothers ask her to oversee the family guest house on the Isle of Skye, it's a chance to dust off her long-ignored business skills and make a new start. But her hopes for a smooth transition are dashed when the hotel manager, Malcolm Blake, turns out to be irritating, condescending, and incredibly attractive.
Malcolm Blake gave up everything, his home, his girlfriend, and his career, to return to Skye and raise his late sister's teenage daughter. With few job opportunities available on the island, he signs on as the manager of the McDonald Family Hotel, which he's soon running successfully without interference from the owners. That is, until Serena shows up, challenging his authority and his conviction that there's nothing missing from his new life on Skye.
Before long, Serena and Malcolm have to admit the spark between them is more than a mere irritation. But as single parents, there's more on the line than their own hearts. Will their commitment to family be the thing that draws them together, or the only thing that could keep them apart? And listeners can receive 20% off through the month of July by clicking the link that is included in our show notes.
And now, back to the show.
Anyway, moving on. So those were the teen years.
Yes.
I want to go more into your adult life, and you can go in stages. I'd say I'm still in a young, not a young adult as in terms of fiction, but a younger adult.
You're so
and so
kind.
My tastes have changed quite a bit since then. Mm. I will say, going back, I do want to add really quick, I read both as an adult and as a kid, the Left Behind series.
Oh, yes.
For each category.
Yes.
And those were, of course, I mean, if you were a Christian in the 90s,
you read them.
There was no way that you could not know what Left Behind is. And I read, how many young adult ones did there end up being? Do you remember?
Many. I don't even know the count because there were so many different series, you know, and then there were the graphic novels, and then there were, you know, I mean, it just.
I think I read up until the 20s,
okay.
Plus, maybe into the 30s,
yeah.
For the young adult series.
There
and then by then,
that.
Yeah. And I remember waiting for the next one, like just so impatiently,
yeah.
Waiting for the next one to come out. And every time it would come out, I would remember begging my parents to take me to the bookstore so I could go pick up the next Left Behind book.
Yeah. We had them in the school library too, and they were checked out a lot there. Some, I shouldn't say a lot, some, they were checked out.
And of course, as an adult, early adult, I can't recall if I was in like late high school or early college, I ended up reading the Left Behind series, the adult books,
oh,
which
sure.
At that point, it's like rereading a brand new story because it is a brand new story as well,
yeah,
too. So.
It is. Yeah. From a different perspective, of course.
Yeah. But I find those books so fascinating because it was kind of my first introduction to the Book of Revelation. The Book of Revelation,
oh.
First of all, is not a book that your pastor tends to read or talk about in church. Although my current church, we've talked about it, but yeah, I just remember reading those and it kind of is your first introduction into Revelation. And I think that that was something that as an adult, now I'm like, well, I don't know if I agree with these certain theological
sure,
points,
sure.
But the idea is that I think that that's why I love his fiction in general, is that I think it just opens your eyes to biblical truths that you wouldn't
right.
have known. And
right.
For Left Behind series in particular, it really was kind of my first introduction into Revelation.
Nice, nice. I've often pondered how wonderful it was that Redeeming Love, of course. Yeah, I mean, that was so powerful because it was a retelling of the story of Gomer and Hosea. I mean, yeah, that book I've handed out at the library, it has had more impact. The only book that has had more impact is the Bible, I think, as I've been handing it out to people here, hand selling it and just saying. And now with the movie coming out, I think a whole new generation of people is going to get introduced to that story.
It was so incredible when that announcement came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then her Mark of the Lion series after that. Wow.
I just remember when that announcement came up, it wasn't more than what, a couple, 2-3 weeks ago? Has it been that long? Longer? I don't remember. Time kind of stands still in the virus, I think.
Yeah.
But I just remember it lit the internet, particularly for the Christian readers community. It lit everything abuzz.
Yes. Yeah, we all went, share.
Yes! Okay, Wanda, I want to hear some more books into adulthood for you. What were some of your big life changers?
Well, my college years, I'm still BC here, you know. So besides Tolkien, which again was planting seeds, I read a lot of feminist literature because I was in college at that time. And I met Gloria Steinem and I met some of the other big names in the feminist world at that time at our little college down the road here. And it was okay. And then I also went into, as many people do, I think I can see a pattern of age. I went into a lot of wealth building books. Zig Ziglar, who is fantastic, and Napoleon Hill. I read a lot of those types of books too. But then coming into my life after I decided that I couldn't live without Christ. Hooray. Then I have just lists of books that I loved and still love.
What would be, I mean, I know you said that the Lord of the Rings series was one of several that was really planting those seeds, the science fiction ones also being some of the ones that you mentioned. But do you remember some of those very first books you read after you became a follower of Christ and how that impacted you? What were they?
Well, interestingly enough, Jeanette Oakey and those first Frontier and Pioneer Life books, because my mom read them. And so I read them too after she died. But then I moved into James Byron Huggins and Sigmund Brouwer.
That's a name I'm not familiar
with. Yeah. Oh, and those two writers I dubbed Christian horror. And yeah, they're intense. You see, in 86, Frank Peretti came out with This Present Darkness.
Has it been that long?
I know. Can you believe it? I came on the public library in 87, 88, and that book was already opening doors. And the doors that
It's funny opened, because I find I never realized that he wrote that early on. That's older than I am.
No.
It is.
Oh, my
just
gosh.
Barely.
You're just
like
pup.
A smidge.
Oh, my gosh. You're just a pup. And so he opened the door for Huggins and for Brouwer and for Ted Decker, whose name you'll know. Yeah. Yeah. Because they, you know, they wouldn't have been on the scene without him. And he wouldn't have been on the scene without Jeanette Oakey. And, you know, some of the older authors like George MacDonald in the previous century opened doors in that era. Grace Livingston Hill was around then too, but I didn't read too much of her. Too formulaic, I think. I love T. Davis Bunn. If you've read him. Oh,
I have not.
And Brock and Bodhi Tenney. Oh, love them. Love them. They set out a great worldview.
I feel like that name comes up in more conversations with other authors than any other writer, other than like, you know, the Jeanette Oakeys the Taneys are for sure among some of the top that I hear frequently. Yeah. And I know my parents can't, my dad specifically. It's funny because he's he's been a reader, but he's slower than my mom and I. Yeah. And so he takes his time, but he has been just obsessed with the Taneys lately again. Oh. So,
is that how you say their name? Teens?
Oh, I guess that's how I say it. Is it?
Okay. I say Tene. I don't know why, because it seems the German pronunciation to me. I don't know
that
why.
That would probably make more sense. Brock and Brody Taney. We should look that up.
Then I moved into the allegories. And boy, if you haven't read Robin Hardy, her allegories are phenomenal. Annals of Lystra, Stryker, and then Penelope Wilcock. That Hawk and the Dove series really opened my eyes to what life might have been like in a monastery, in a medieval monastery, and how the human condition transcends wherever we are, time and in space. And Joel Rosenberg, hello. Yeah, yeah.
You are just, this is why I love talking with the librarian. Just a fount of information, of names. And
today, while I was researching for this, I ran across L.A. Kelly, who wrote the Tawn series, another allegory that I loved, 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 and found out that that's Leisha Kelly, who you don't know. Like, you're looking at me like,
oh, I'm a little confused.
Leisha Kelly, she wrote another series of books that I just fell in love with also, but I didn't realize that she was the author of the Tawn series that I also loved. So there you go. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks so much for listening to part one with Wanda Erickson, our small town librarian here in Minnesota. We will be kicking off part two with Wanda Erickson in 2 weeks, where we will hear more about Wanda's favorite books in the last 10 to 15 years, and also her experiences as a librarian of bringing in some really fantastic big name authors to a really small town in Minnesota, including the wonderful Lorraine Snelling. So we get to hear a little bit about that. So stay tuned in 2 weeks for part two with Wanda Erickson. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Story Nerds. We'll catch you in a couple weeks.